Blog Talk Radio.
And you're listening to the Cyber Media Radio Show.
Cyber Media Group is a multimedia company.
They were suffering all forms of colonization, oppression, exploitation, degradation, humiliation, discrimination, and every other kind of
hate. I think there's still a lot of hope for us to progress.
We are continuing last week's topic of the complex business, social, and political street mind of Tupac Shakur.
Being shot is either going to leave you with one of the two keys, either bitter or better.
Cyber Media Radio, topic today is a family secret. Incest and molestation.
It's devastating.
It's the job of the parents to protect the children.
So our topic today is, should college student athletes receive payments?
That person, the college, is making probably about $4 to $5 million a year off that person.
Cyber Media Radio. So our topic today is, my baby is a gangster, like me. Hereditary gang membership.
The recession is getting bad now for the whole world. But it's really been bad for poor people in America for a long time.
Because those of us who walk around free of incarceration have figured out a way to institutionalize ourselves.
As generations of poverty who didn't believe that they could rise above their class, their stature, their education level, tried to get in where they can fit in.
There have been many of our people across the country from all walks of life who have taken it upon themselves to try and pool their ideas and to come up with some kind of solution to the problem that confronts all of our people.
What's good, people? Today is Thursday, February 26, 2015, and you're listening to the Cyber Media Radio Show. I'm your host from Michigan, Dwight Rock Walker, General Manager, Cyber Media Group, and joining me today is my co-host. First, she's a social worker as well as a social and political pundit from Jersey City, New Jersey, Sean Defense, a.k.a. IQ. What's happening, IQ?
Good evening, Rock. It's a pleasure to be here with you again on this evening.
Oh, no doubt. And hopefully we can get Wise on. Wise is supposed to call in, but he hasn't called in yet. He's a counselor with Troubled Youth in Atlanta, Georgia, and he is Sean Ennis, a.k.a. Wise. Hopefully, Wise, if you're listening, you can call into the show because we need you today especially. To join our discussion, you can call us at 347-215-7095. Once again, that's 347-215-7095. You can blog with us live at blogtalkradio.com/cybermediaradio. There's our Facebook page at Cyber Media Radio. That's one word. And at Twitter at Cyber Media Group. Cyber Media Group is a multimedia company with a focus on film, videography, photography, graphic design, and entertainment. Our online sales. Our radio show focuses on all these elements, including social and political awareness. So, IQ, next week, actually, I think we're going to do a show in reference to the prison industrial complex. We're going to talk about different aspects. It's going to be a good topic. But today we want to take a break from that, take a break from the social issues that we talk about, and we're going to talk about the rise and fall of Wu-Tang Clan. All right. Now, IQ, I know you don't know that much about, you were around in the 90s, you don't know that much about the groups, but from a psychological standpoint, your opinion is very valuable. And like I said, hopefully Wise will call in where we can have that discussion anyway. So let me start it off like this. I remember going to the beach with my cousins in the early 90s, and I'm sitting down at the beach, and one of them had a radio on, and the radio was playing this song, M-E-T-H-O-D, Man. I'm like, who the heck is that? And it was a hot song, hot track, and the whole nine. And I'm listening like, yo, that's hot. Like, who is that? It's always this new group, Wu-Tang Clan. I say Wu-Tang Clan, the ones who did Protect Your Neck. So for those who don't know, which you have to be under a rock, but Wu-Tang Clan actually had came out. It's a group of rappers. I think initially it was either seven or nine of them. I think it was nine of them who had came out. Basically, they couldn't get a record deal themselves. So they decided, you know, just go for broke and let's go ahead and just put out our own stuff. So they turned around, put out a song called Protect Your Neck. Became a very, very popular record in New York. Really big, all right? Watching the video on television and the whole nine. So it was just very interesting because this dynamic had never been done before. These guys did this track that became very popular. Now, if you know the history of Wu-Tang, you know that all of these members wanted to sign their own solo deals, okay? RZA, who was the de facto leader of the group, him and his management went and negotiated a deal where all of these guys can actually have solo record deals. So they have one record deal together and then have solo record deals with different record companies. This was unheard of. You got all of these guys, these seven or nine guys or whatever, all of these guys are signed to one label, but that didn't impede them from going and signing other deals. So you had the RZA, GZA, Method Man, Raekwon, Ghostface Killer, Inspect the Deck, U God, Master Killer, and Old Dirty Bastard. So you got all of these guys, and I'm thinking eventually you had Capadonna. So you got all of these guys who had separate record deals, all right, or would have second record deals after they came out with their first album. So just to run down the albums real quick, we got Enter the Wu-Tang, 36 Chambers, okay? We have Wu-Tang Forever, The W, Iron Flag, Eight Diagrams, and A Better Tomorrow. That is from 1993 up to 2014. Now, in between, you had other albums that they were on, all right? And they had solo albums, but those are the group albums. Now, I could spend 2 hours, 3 hours talking about Wu-Tang. It's a big group. Each individual person had their own career, some more successful than others. We can talk about production of RZA and all of his works and the things he's doing. He's on a show, Gang Related, which is a great show, which I find it better than a lot of other shows that's on television. The movies he's done that he's been in personally or just did the soundtracks for. You know, you could talk about Method Man, his sitcom, and all this other stuff. There's so many different things that we could talk about. We're going to try to pretty much stick to Wu-Tang and what they have done and their rise and fall, basically. And I say fall, not in fall as they're not doing anything else, but rather fall in terms of the group itself. And this is what you can comment on here, IQ. The group itself were all together in Shaolin, which is Staten Island, because they're from Staten Island, New York. They're all together. The first album, then they go off and do solo projects, but they still come back together as a unit to do the Wu-Tang Forever album, which is a great album, great album. But after that, there's a series of things happen. And one was the fact that RZA had a 5-year plan. In that 5-year plan, he created Enter the Wu-Tang. He did Wu-Tang Forever album, those two albums. He also produced Raekwon, ODB's albums, all of these different albums he did, his album, in that 5-year plan. And at the end of the 5-year plan, he no longer oversaw directly the Wu-Tang material. In fact, what he did was he actually delegated to other producers to do all of these different works. And he had a bunch of people, Shaheem, The Rugged Child, all these other people. So with people going off onto their solo careers and all of that, it kind of gave people the perspective that Wu wasn't together the way that they were before, you know, which if you listen to their music after that second album, even though they might have had a couple more hits, it wasn't the same. So from a group perspective, IQ, you know, we see this happen all the time with groups who make it big, but when they start eating, they kind of like, they might fall apart. The music or stuff is not the same. You follow what I'm saying?
I do.
Okay, I'm sorry.
It sounds like the group together literally worked united, and then they got to a place where the hand felt like they didn't need the thigh no more, and the thigh felt like it didn't need the feet anymore, and then the toes thought they could walk out needing the ankle and things of that nature. We got out here, like you said, we got to eating a little bit, and now that we got a taste of what it's like to make this little bit of money, now we're going to get out here and do it on our own. But from what my understanding is, when they were together and united and trying to get to the point where they actually made it, the unity amongst the group, they were more cohesive. This is from my understanding. Again, I don't know that much about them, you know, in terms of the ins and outs. But from the outside looking in, when we all little and we're all humble, we all work together. We get a little bit bigger. Now some of us have a name. Now we feel like we don't even really need it. So now we're just doing it because we have to, as opposed to I have a love for it. I have a love for you. I have a love for what we do. And let's get together and make this thing shine.
So based on that, would you say, now, here's the thing, and I want to get your opinion on this. There's a documentary on Wu-Tang Clan. There's a newer one that came out, but there was one, I think, from 2008 that I was just watching a couple of weeks ago, where it went through everything from their origin. Now, here's the makeup. You got different guys from different parts of the city. Just like any city, you have, you know, there's different rivals, et cetera, et cetera. You had two guys who were from Brooklyn, and one was ODB. I can't remember the other one offhand. But there were two who were from Brooklyn, but who hung in Staten Island. Somebody came up with the idea to put all of these rappers together and force them, basically, to start hanging out together to build on that background and eventually do their album and stuff. So it wasn't like all of them were just boys right off the bat. Raekwon and Ghost hung together all the time. You know, they lived around the corner from each other. And it was other people, so it wasn't like that. But from the documentary, the thing that I got, keep that in mind, that all of them weren't boys in the beginning. They became cool when they worked together. But then it was hinted that there was a lot of things that were done, you know, to each other, from each other, you know, that made them not trust each other. Now, the biggest thing that I can really see here is this last album that they were working on, A Better Tomorrow, okay? When they were working on that album, there were certain members, I'm going to put it out there, Raekwon, who basically felt from the interviews and different things like that, that really he wanted to be compensated for his work, all right? And I can understand, you know, where he's coming from, but Wu-Tang has always been a group, from what I understand, who split the royalties for the most part, except for, I would assume, not production, because RZA got the money for the production. So I would assume everything else was kind of split. But Ray felt he should have had more money. So when I'm looking at the documentary, RZA turns around and says, well, I think it wasn't RZA, it was the management, says, you know, RZA is an, oh, no, I'm sorry, there was an interview with RZA. RZA says, you know, he's a name, he feels he should get more money, but I'm a name, you know what I'm saying? Method Man is a name. You know, all of these guys, not all of them, but a lot of them had careers, and they should be paid more money. So how do you turn around and say somebody else who wasn't as famous as the other guys, Inspector Deck or Capadonna or one of them, who weren't as famous, You God, they're going to get less money? I understand what you're saying, but all in all, it just, you mess up the dynamics of the group by just saying, look, this guy gets, you know, they give us $2 million to make this album. I'm going to give Raekwon $500,000, you know, of that, but then I'm going to give somebody else $100,000 of that, you know, and it builds this friction. So just based on what you've seen other groups go through, you know, how do you get over that friction in order to make a good album again?
You can't get over it if there's a lack of humility amongst the members, and you definitely are not going to get over it if there's a lack of respect. If I feel like what I'm doing or who I am is greater than or bigger than you, then I'm not going to be able to make anything work amongst the crew, because my feelings towards you is going to mess up the flow amongst all of us, which I kind of get confused sometimes, because when groups, when they hit the big top, they tend to forget all that grinding they did to get to the big top. And then, like you said, you get those few who feel like, well, my name is a little bit bigger than yours. I made a little bit more money than you. You know, I'm a little bit more talented, I feel, than you. Or, you know, like, why can't I eat a little bit more than everybody else? Well, you can't eat a little more because we were all up in here grinding the same.
Right.
You might be doing your thing on your own, and as a solo artist, you may be out there killing them. But when it comes to this group and this group effort right here, we all grinding the same, each one together. And I think a lot of crews, a lot of groups, they miss that as they get bigger and as they become famous. Boy, that love of money and kill them.
Right, the love of money. And don't get me wrong, I don't know what the ins and outs were. I mean, Raekwon could have had some legitimate beefs with the situation, but I know it resulted eventually, I believe, he wasn't featured on that album, that last album. So, I mean, it became that bad to that point where he felt he really couldn't even, you know, be on that album. And like I said, I believe that was the case as far as that's concerned. But and this is such an influential group. Let me read this article real quick that they had about Wu-Tang. It says they have introduced and launched the careers of a number of affiliated artists and groups, often collectively known as the Wu-Tang Killer Bees. And in 2008, About.com ranked them the number one greatest hip-hop group of all time. Chris X of Rolling Stone called Wu-Tang Clan the best rap group ever. And in 2004, the NME hailed them as one of the most influential groups of the last 10 years. You know how many copycat people came out with groups trying to get individual people signed, trying to mock what Wu-Tang has done? I mean, this was a phenomenal group. The one thing that I always was troubled with in later albums was primarily Wu-Tang's, how can I say, their distance between each other. The first two albums, I felt it, you know, them together. The W album didn't feel as together as the other one. It was all right. But by Iron Flag album, you could pretty much see that these guys were not together. I think when someone said is initially they went from being a group to just being a group of people who rhyme on an album. In other words, they don't even meet each other. They might come in, somebody rhymes, they leave, somebody else comes in, they rhyme, and that's not the group. Whereas before, all of them would be in the studio rhyming together. You know, so I think RZA had even said something during the documentary to that fact as well. You know, so is that what it is, IQ? Just like you were saying before, as far as, you know, people being in the group and them rocking together, but now they're eating, so now they're going separately. And when you flow and when you rhyme, you can feel that that's what's happening. So is every group, well, almost every group, is it inevitable that this happens?
No, I don't believe that to be true, especially when, you know, you have groups who stay together and have careers 20, 30 years long. Now, I've been in the studio a few times. I don't care for the studio life. You already know that. But I do know one of the things that I observed about the studio is when there are artists in there and when there are producers in there, you guys feed off of one another. You know, you may say A, B, C, D, and E, and here comes somebody else, yo, but E, F, G, and H. And you guys take all of that positive energy and you use it to make what it is you're working on successful, or at least a product that somebody would kill to get their hands on. But now if you're coming into that environment and you're in a mindset where I don't even need these other jokers, I'm going to come in here, do what I got to do and be out, how do you think that the product is going to still sell the way it did before, especially when there are consumers like yourself who can sense the fact that they have a separate way of thinking now? When we came into the studio and we had a united way of thinking, we did an album where you can sense the unity. But now what you're saying to me is the albums, when they hit you guys, you can hear the fact that these dudes came in there, did what they had to do for the most part, and really wasn't beat for being around the other brothers. And it ultimately didn't do them any good.
So is that something that's on the individual guys, or is that something that the leadership should have done something different in order to keep that group, you know, the way that it was? Or should there be an evolution where the leadership conducts leadership differently in order to bring these guys together?
I think it's the responsibility of the leadership to bring to the group's attention what it is that they're observing. And that's if the leadership is even smart enough to observe what's going on. Now, if you're smart enough to observe what's going on and you don't speak to it, then you shouldn't be in position of leader. There should definitely be an evolution going on because somebody got to pull these jokers' coats. I don't care how much money you're making. You out of pocket right now, and you need to be dealt with. This thing is bigger than you. And so I feel like not just leadership should have said something, but those of us being led should have opened up their faces and said something. Because I know we can sense the fact that things are not going right. I'm a member of a group. We got together, and there's tension amongst the group. And one day somebody just said, you know what, I've had it, damn it, this is it. Y'all going to talk this thing out because it's messing up the whole floor for the rest of us.
Right.
We're going to get this on the table right now. Somebody should have had enough sense to do that. If somebody would have had enough sense to do that, they might be making waves right now in the hip-hop industry. But they're not. They should be.
Well, I mean, then that's the other side of it. This group has been around 24 years. 24 years. So, I mean, is it unrealistic to say, and I know that you have groups like the Isley Brothers who's been around 50, 60 years, but on average, where you have, like, the career of a rapper or a singer or something like that that might last 5 years, you have a group that was still doing albums, just did an album in 2014, still doing albums, and as of 2014, I think that was their 23rd year or something like that, or 23rd year, you know, they're still making albums. So is it unrealistic to think that, okay, even with the best intentions and the best guys in the group, eventually, because you have so many people, that it's going to be very difficult for leadership to keep them together? Is that is that just a naive way of thinking?
I like to see the glasses half full. And I feel like with the right leadership and followership, because we don't want to put all of the responsibility on leadership, because some of the responsibility lies on those who are being led, like I said before. A group can last 100 years, and let's be honest about it. Some of the stuff I'm hearing in hip-hop right now that's commercialized, that's selling, is beyond ridiculous. It's ridiculous, the fact that these brothers and sisters are making the money they're making. Really? Now, if Wu-Tang was not one of the groups that caught my ear, you already know how I feel about hip-hop. But what I do know is that they influenced hip-hop a great deal. There were a lot of brothers who came out on the scene who attempted to sound like or mimic or do something similar to what Wu-Tang was doing. I had enough sense to notice that. So why isn't Wu-Tang still making the same type of influence on hip-hop genre today? Because like you said, that lack of cohesiveness, that unity ultimately it left them and it's killing them. 2014, I
agree with that. But I think that they're I think that the songs that they're doing today, there is a combination of things as to the reason why they're not hit now. I mean, think about it. One, times have changed for hip-hop. The music that they did is no longer what's around today. You see, when Jay-Z does something, he's tailoring his music for today. You know what I'm saying? Now, not everyone does that. Some people feel if you do that to a certain extent, then you're catering to a younger audience and you're kind of selling out. Some people believe that. Wu-Tang's type of music today is not the same as it was. So that might be one reason. But obviously it's the other reason I spoke about earlier, with them not being collectively together. You know what I'm saying? Their style of rap is different than what's out today. I mean, this stuff that's out today that's just ridiculous, like you said. I mean, I listen to some of the rap today. You can't even understand what some people are mumbling, and they still making a hit record.
Literally.
And I don't get that, but
literally. Literally. I have said to the teenagers I work with all the time, the reason why some of y'all are failing in school is because of the music you're listening to. The music has been dumbed down. You do not have a challenge in terms of being intellectually stimulated with the music that you're listening to. The music that we listen to, it challenged us. We had to take our time to figure out what it was that some of them were saying. Some of them
because it was artistic.
Thank you. We had to go to the dictionary at times. Remember No Ledge? What was it? Eric B. and Rakim? No Ledge?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, No Ledge. That was good. But again, it was a positive message being thrown out there for the most part when I was listening to hip-hop back in the day. These children aren't getting that. I don't give about you. Seriously? And you wonder why. But you wonder why.
Well,
think about it. You wonder why.
Wait. But here's the other side to that, though. Now, you got to remember, we had some of the most grimiest rap that there ever was. So I got to say that. In the 90s especially, you had some of the most, much more grimier than it is today. Now,
There was a balance.
But the difference was, I think what the big difference was, when you have a group like Wu-Tang, things like that, you had musically artistic lyrics. He can be talking about he's going to kill your mother. It's the way that he says it that makes it artistic. He's not just going to say, I'm going to kill your mother. You know what I'm saying? But he might say, you know, your father going to be wearing that black dress. You know what I'm saying? It was artistically, you know, it was done differently. Where today is just blatant. So that's the reason why, like, a lot of people in my generation, when they look at today's rap and they say, okay, where is the artistry of lyrics? It's not there anymore. Now, you might have it in some music and certain things, but Wu-Tang in particular, when you look at RZA, RZA did things in his music that was so artistic that on 36 Chambers, we would all those producers would get together and talk about it and say, you know what? Why is this dude making mistakes on a freaking live album? You got beats running after it, supposed the song's supposed to end, all kinds of stuff. Well, we didn't realize until the next album that the mistakes were done on purpose. He did these things on purpose because that was his signature. You know what I'm saying? Sloppy snares and all kinds of stuff. We didn't understand that. But we did understand when Ghost was rhyming and he's doing a song, you know, very making it very vivid. You know what I'm saying? So he's saying a song about his friend got killed and how he's laying on the ground, how he grabbed somebody's cell phone. He tried to dial 911, but it was a low cell. He gave it back to the girl. The guy's mother comes running out, and he's screaming all of that, you know, on the ground for her, for him. You know, very vivid because this is what Wu-Tang was. And Wu-Tang no longer has that edge, at least not with A Better Tomorrow. There is one thing I do want to touch base before we go. There is another album called Once Upon a Time in Shaolin, of which I heard very little of it. They made one copy of it. RZA consistently gets offers for this album in the millions. Wu-Tang made this album a few years ago and never released it. The members haven't even heard the album. That's how secretive it is. Yes, and it's in Morocco, I believe. And I saw a video where the guy was talking about this album, how he played a little bit of it just to tease it, but then that's it. And it's a phenomenal album, but they're not releasing it. The guy who owns it keeps it in some gold something, and right now he has it in, like, museums. It's one copy of the album. So they're trying to decide if they're going to release this album or not. It has 31 tracks on it, and they're trying to decide if they're going to release it or not. But, you know, they haven't made that decision yet. So it's just very interesting that Wu-Tang does have some great art that's out there. You know, not to mention all the other stuff that they did, but they have some great art that's out there, but they're not going to release it. And I'm curious as to what's going to happen next. IQ, you get the last word.
Well, we have to take Wu-Tang's experience and apply it to ourselves. Always remember, it's not about you, it's about the unit. When it's about you, that's fine. But when it's about the unit, you got to keep the unit in mind. Let's not find ourselves in positions where the rest of us have to fail because you feel like you're too focused on you and you only succeeding. That's not cool.
That's
I don't
not
know
cool.
Hip-hop, but I know that's not cool.
Thank you for joining us tonight. For questions and comments, you can reach us on Facebook at Siren Media Radio or by email at smrsirenmedia.com. From my executive producer, Perry Wooding, producer Josh Johnson, from Sean Defense and myself, Dwight Rock Walker. We'll talk to you next Thursday. Remember, Psalms 37:24. Peace out. See you next week.